This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Don Mason. He's going to be talking with us about his recent month-long trip to Africa. What took you to Africa, Don?
Well, I combined two purposes. My wife Donna and I were fortunate to be a part of the World Alliance of Reformed Churches General Council meeting in Accra, Ghana, and that was the first 2 weeks. In the second 2 weeks, we met up with a group of seven, including us, from our own local church here, the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana, on a mission project with our sister church in the country of Malawi.
Now, for those whose geography on Africa may be a little weak, where is Ghana and where is Malawi in Africa?
Okay. Well, I'm a student of the geography in Africa myself. It was my first experience in the western part of Africa. That Ghana is north of the equator, so it's the end of summer there, like it is here. It was hot and muggy. And it's where the western bulge occurs. It's right on the bottom half of the south half of that. Malawi, they're both quite small countries. Malawi is in the southern part of Africa, more toward the east edge. It's not on the coast like Ghana. It's between Zimbabwe, Mozambique on the south, and Tanzania in the north.
Now, this World Alliance of Reformed Churches General Council only meets every, 7 or 8 years,
you were telling me.
And it's similar to what other religious groups do worldwide. They get together very occasionally, but they do. It's an important meeting when it happens.
That's right. It's not well known in Presbyterian circles, even, I would say. But I've been becoming a little more alert to what happened after the Reformation. Christians that followed John Calvin and took the Reformation to Scotland and to the North America and to eventually to all the ends of the earth, make up the Reformed Church family. It's about 215 churches now in over 100 countries.
Different denominations.
They're all different denominations, but they're related to each other. Just as there's a Lutheran World Federation and a Methodist World Body and an Anglican World Body, so we have the Reformed. It's made up of Presbyterians, Congregational Churches, United Churches, and Reformed Churches in every country.
Now, how large of a gathering was this in Africa? And this was just last month, right?
Mm-hmm. This was the end of July through the middle of August. There were 400 official delegates. From my own denomination, there would be 9 representatives, the Presbyterian Church USA. There are 10 such churches in the North America continent. There were additionally about 400 visitors. Donna and I technically were visitors. We're in the visitor program. And so these 800 people or so had a building designed just for this purpose, so we exactly fit into have the simultaneous translations into 4 languages and all. It was designed just perfectly. It was an air-conditioned building. We stayed on the campus of the University of Ghana.
Hmm. And what was the purpose of the meeting?
Mm-hmm. Well, every 7 or 8 years, these bodies send their delegates together to address the issues of the world, focus their energy and resources on the priority matters of mission, to revitalize worship, and to listen to the concerns of the constituents. Some Christians are extreme minorities in their most of the Christians are in minority situations in their own countries. Some of them are suffering persecution. Some of them are experiencing civil war. So it's a time of sharing with each other what the concerns are and taking action on them.
And why in Africa and why in Ghana for this meeting?
Mm-hmm. Well, that raises an interesting thought. I was reminded at this meeting how much my mindset about the center of gravity for Christianity has changed in the last 50 years. We tended to think, and when this was formed in the 1800s, the 1875, when the first meeting took place, primarily it was a European, North American constituency. And if you went to the meeting, most of the people would be white. As I looked around the room at Ghana, there were fewer whites than people of color. Mm-hmm. The center of gravity has changed to the south. The Christians in Asia, Africa, Latin America, the South Sea Islands are vitally strong and growing rapidly. And they have more delegates because they have more people.
Mm-hmm. So it was a representational assembly, and white people were in a minority.
There's a great effort to make this body inclusive and representative of its diversity. Mm-hmm. I happened to ride on a plane from Johannesburg to Accra with a delegation from Korea. They had sent in their slate of 9 delegates a year early. 9 older men, Korean men, and leaders of the church. The credentials committee sent it back and said that would not work. They wouldn't be accepted. They needed 4 men, 4 women, and 1 person 30 years or younger in age. Uh-huh. And so I happened to be sitting by the young woman, 30 years or less, who was extremely sharp in her theological understanding and her viewpoints. And she wound up on the nominating committee to select the next 8 years central committee.
Wow!
So the group does represent. And in North America, we get, I believe, it's either 4 or 5 to the central committee. Mm. Africa gets 8 or 9. Mm. Asia gets 8 or 9.
Because there are that many more.
That's right.
Christians of this particular Protestant Reformed type from those countries. Now, with this change in your lifetime from what this world gathering is like, it says something very positive, of course, about the Reformed churches in this one Protestant tradition, attitude and values and growth and so forth in Asia and Latin America and Africa. But isn't it also kind of a put down of this Christian group in Europe and the U.S.?
Well, I think it does say something about it's descriptive of what's happening to the Christian communities of Europe and North America. The culture in these places has changed considerably, and there's a rapid growth in there's a lot of diversity of religious practice and belief in our community here, for example. But I think there's also evidence that there are many more people who are saying, I'm not practicing any religious pattern. I'm not caught up in any organized church activity at this point.
Or you could say people are more people in Europe and America refusing to make a commitment.
That's true. I think that's descriptive. And we have something to learn about, for example, worship from these new Christian communities. There was quite a conversation about how the missionaries from Scotland and North America and other parts of Europe took the faith to Africa, for example, and how those groups adopted our music and even our clergy attire. And now for a while it was frowned on there to use the more native African style of dance and music. That's definitely changing. And Dr. C.S. Song, the president the last 7 years from Taiwan, president of the World Alliance of Reformed Churches, said it used to be talk, talk, talk at these meetings, and now it's dance, dance, dance.
A big change. We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Reverend Don Mason, recently returned from Africa, where he was a visitor at the General Council meeting of the World Alliance of Reformed Churches, and also visited, that was in Ghana, and also visited in Malawi. And we'll be talking about both of these events later, but let me encourage listeners who have questions or who have comments about anything our guest talks about today. Since this is a live program every Sunday afternoon on WILL AM 580, you may join us by punching in 1-800-222-9455 anywhere the program is heard. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Listeners, even on the internet, can reach us if they're in the continental U.S. by using that toll-free number. In Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates here on the campus of the University of Illinois, you may punch in 333-9455 to access several local lines. So in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Don, when you were in Ghana, what were some of the things at this meeting that made you laugh, made you smile, surprised you?
Well, the worship is always lively at these global church gatherings. The music and the style of dress, for example, from all the world, it just makes the whole context very lively. But I became aware that every sanctuary that I visited, and one weekend they sent us out to all the villages of Ghana, and some people went to Togo, a neighboring country. And I saw several small churches and larger churches, and every place there seems to be a major space between the pulpit and the first row of where the people are gathered. And it became rather clear that there's a good reason for that, because when the drums start to play and the other music comes in, and they often had a brass band, the people just move into that open area and dance. And when they speak of songs of praise, it includes a lot of body movement. And every time there's an offering of money, for example, there's none of this passing the plates down the pews. Everyone dances forward and places their money, and many times there's more than one offering. So an offering might take 20, 30 minutes. Let me mention, on the other weekend that we were there, they basically closed down the Presbyterian churches of Accra and told them all to come to the Independence Square at the center of town. It was estimated there were 20,000 people present.
Wow.
And we were given places of honor at the front, but there was still this huge open area. And for most of the worship event, which went on for about 3 hours, great movement of people, colorfully dressed and experiencing great joy and vitality in their worship. So that made me smile, and gave a lot of the time went quickly when we had these long worship times together.
But here you are, a middle-aged, if I may be so rude, white man. I think, maybe, do I remember you're from Kansas originally?
I grew up in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. You know, Midwesterner. You're used to worshiping in churches where, Presbyterian churches, where only one person speaks at a time, where people remain seated or stand in one place during the whole service. It's over precisely in an hour or less. Would you be comfortable worshiping in these ways that Presbyterians and Christians worship around the world if you were to doing it regularly?
Good question. There's a great deal of conversation about worship in my own local church, in our denomination, the Presbyterian Church USA, and throughout the world. And I think even we like to call ourselves the frozen chosen, we Presbyterians, even we are starting to loosen up a little bit. I think our worship this morning had a song called Celebrate that we all got into in a new form, and it made chills go up and down my back to hear our choir singing this as an introit this morning. We're gaining. I think the world is small enough now that we are picking up these resources from each other and using them.
What would be lost if the more typical worship style of Protestant Christians in the U.S. and Europe were to be radically changed, would the intellectual rigor, the importance on an educated clergy, on using all the tools of modern literary and historical scholarship to interpret the Bible, would that be just tossed aside?
I do not think there's any evidence that that's happening in the African church, for example. Every morning we had a Bible study in small groups of about 15 people. We took over a big soccer field, or football as they called it, had little clusters of chairs. After this inspiring worship, we scattered out and we all had the same passage. My group was led by a female scholar from the Central Church of Africa Presbyterian. She's from Malawi. I didn't know they had female scholars in the Church of Malawi. She's working on her PhD, and there were numerous other scholars from South Africa, from Ghana, from Botswana. I was the only North American in my group, and the scholarship about Scripture, the use of commentaries and knowledge of language is very high. I don't think they're sacrificing the Reformed focus on highly educated leadership in the church and the training of clergy. There is strong preaching, and the style of music and the style of dress is changing, even in those cases. But I don't think we're losing those things you mentioned in the process. I'm not too worried about that happening in North America.
Mm. Now, in this meeting in Ghana, tell us what was a typical day like for you?
Well, we were scattered out in the housing areas of the University of Ghana. I was surprised in the dormitory I stayed in how nice it was that we had a private bath for a couple. There was no hot water, and the electricity went off from time to time. But nevertheless, we had the dormitory food was excellent. There was an internet cafe where I could keep in touch with people back home and with my family very easily on a daily basis. So after an early breakfast, we would go to the worship center and have such a rich experience of worship that no one wanted to miss that. Then the Bible study that I described. Then we got into buses and went to this center that was a few kilometers away. You could walk, but time required you to ride the buses. And that's where the plenary sessions took place. And we stayed there for lunch and then throughout the afternoon, back in the evening quite late for dinner, and then committees and groups met into the evening. And sometimes, well, every evening there was worship also. That was the daily pattern.
Hmm. I asked before what made you smile, what made you laugh at these meetings, what surprised you, what disappointed you?
Right off the top, I don't think of something disappointing. I think of I'm having an image of something that was very compelling, very gripping, and almost made me very sad. In fact, it makes me sad to even talk about it. Shall I describe that as well? On one occasion, it's a day that will always be remembered in great detail for me. It was August 3rd. It was a Tuesday. We had an early breakfast so that we could be in our buses by 6 a.m. And there were 20 of these large buses with a police escort to take us through the busy streets of Accra. Accra is a very large, busy city, 2 million people. I was surprised by how developed the nation of Ghana is compared to Malawi. That's a different story. But we took this journey up the coast, the Gold Coast. When Ghana was a colony, it was called Gold Coast. It's a British colony. And we went 150 kilometers to Elmina Slave Castle, as they called it. We stopped at a gathering place where we could pray and prepare ourselves emotionally, spiritually, and physically for an experience of visiting these slave dungeons. There were actually two of them. The one I went to was called Elmina. And the Portuguese had built this in 1482, 10 years before Columbus came to this part of the world. And it was built, I think, initially for trade purposes. But very soon, the trade became people for slaves. And people were housed in this facility. There was an area for women, an area for men. And what was so poignant about it, we went in small groups of 15 to 20. There were Africans in every group. There were Africans in the diaspora, as they referred to African Americans, Afro-Brazilians, Afro-Haitians. And so many of the African slaves did wind up in Latin and South America. For some of them, they chose to go as a unit alone. But others, my group, for example, was led by an African American who, in my group, it was a very emotional experience. It was for all of us. For the African Americans, it seemed almost unbearable. One fainted. Many sobbed uncontrollably. And when we came to the window of no return, as they call it, it just was such a powerful image of how village people were gathered up, forcibly starved and mistreated so as to make them weaker. And then these human beings were put into ships to be carried to unknown places. And as we learned yesterday in a conference here in Urbana, sponsored by the Religious Leaders for Community Care, Dr. James Anderson from the University of Illinois was telling us the intergenerational nature of slavery is such that usually when slavery was legal, you were a slave for your lifetime and that was it. But these folks, it was their children and their children's children to up to 10 generations. So it set that in motion. And people, and 60 million were run through these slave castles. And only 15 million would survive it. One out of four would survive the experience. So I think that fact alone made such an impact on African Americans to think that of their ancestors, three out of four did not survive mm-hmm. that kind of treatment. It really, there were so many parts of it I probably could not even describe accurately. But we didn't take any pictures in my group because we just couldn't bring ourselves to photograph a sacred moment. I have to confess one other aspect of that made such an image. The governor and the leaders, it was not only Portuguese, later it was the Dutch, and who knows what other European countries were experiencing similar things. But the Dutch Reformed Church built a chapel at the top of this slave castle right above where these people were housed, if you call it housing, and worshiped God. So our prayers of confession had to recognize that we of the Reformed tradition were represented not only among the Africans and the Africans who were in the diaspora, but among the Europeans who were there praying to God, reading the scripture, and having our understanding of being Christian in that context. It really...
Just up the hill from the slave dungeon.
Right in the same in the same building.
Mm, I see.
In a higher part of the structure. Mm. What a day that was. A few years ago, my wife and I were in Brazil where we saw the slave auction blocks. Slavery was legal in Brazil until 1884, and a huge percentage of the slaves wound up in that part of the Western Hemisphere. Hmm.
Don Mason is our guest this afternoon on Keeping the Faith. Let me repeat the telephone numbers where people may call us and ask a question or make a comment. 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL is a toll-free call. In Champaign-Urbana, you may reach several lines by punching the 333-9455, 333-WILL in Champaign-Urbana. We're at about halfway through our program today. Let me take just a moment to let our listeners know who our guests will be in upcoming weeks. Next week, when I'll be traveling out of state, we have Becca Nieto Gayet, who will be our guest host, and she'll be interviewing two students who are leaders in a student tutoring program at the University YMCA called Vis-a-Vis. Mary Joy Carnate and Claire Delahunt are the co-directors of that program and are seniors and have had a lot of experience helping other University of Illinois students volunteer one-on-one tutoring for grade school kids, middle school kids, high school kids, helping as teacher's aides. Over 200 students each year from the University of Illinois through this program volunteer in the public schools, and you can learn more about that next week, September 12, here on Keeping the Faith. September 19, Tammy Lemke and Dan Wheatman will be here talking about the United Way and its programs and agencies. Those are some of the programs coming up. These Keeping the Faith programs are supported in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this radio program. I've been at the Y for 5 years now on campus. It's the oldest religious institution at the university. It was started by students in 1873, and since that time has been providing leadership development opportunities for college students by many programs for community service and social action. One of our programs we're planning for the next January is a Holy Land Journey. It's sponsored by several religious foundations and groups at the university, and we'll be taking students from the U of I for 2 weeks to Jerusalem to see the holy sites of both Jews, Christians, and Muslims. This is sponsored not only by the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation and the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, but the University YMCA, McKinley Foundation, the Presbyterian Student Center, Hillel Foundation, the Lutheran Campus Center, and the these are all various groups of the Religious Workers Association on the campus of the university. Students who are interested in this 2-week trip can find out more about it. There is information on the University YMCA website. Just go to universityymca.org and click on Holy Land Journey. You'll find information about that. Part of what will be happening is through Communiversity, some of the non-credit classes offered at the Y each semester and in the summer, we'll be having a Holy Land Journey course for 5 weeks, and that will start on September 13, which is a Monday night at 8:30, and different professors from the university, different religious studies program, and others will be telling us about the history of the various holy sites for these three major world religions. Other people may take that course even if they're not able or eligible to go on the student trip next January. And if you'd like to register for that, just call the University Y, 337-1500, pick up a catalog that are scattered around throughout the community, or again, check the website and go to Communiversity and then look for Holy Land Journey. There is a $15 charge for those who are not going on the trip for those 5 courses on Monday nights starting September 13. Other classes in Communiversity include, we'll be starting in the next week or two, ballroom dance, yoga, exercise, body work, massage. You can learn how to do all these things very inexpensively, basic photography, how to find your inner speaker. All kinds of things are in the catalog for this semester. The New Retirement, A Woman's Sharing Circle, Learning to Tat, T-A-T. Courses at Communiversity starting up this fall at the University YMCA, 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. One last word about the Y. We do have a caller waiting. I'll get to that in just a second, but we are accepting donations of automobiles again. We had 5 over the last couple months, and 4 of those have sold, so we have room for a few more if some people are in the position of wanting to donate a car. Rather than trade in a used car or sell it yourself, You can take a tax deduction if you itemize by donating it to a charity. And the University YMCA has been accepting cars and pickup trucks, particularly ones that would be useful to students. We do sell them. That helps us with our survival, financial survival. So it really helps a number of people. It helps students get a good car or truck cheap, and it helps the donor by giving them a tax deduction. If you're interested, call me, Steve Shoemaker, at the University of Y, 337-1500 during the week. Let's get to line four, someone waiting to talk with our guest, Don Mason. Yes, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for a very, very interesting and intriguing and world-opening kind of discussion. I'm in Chicago and an occasional listener. I wanted to share news of something I just read about and then ask a question about your relations with other worshipers that you met from Africa, in Africa. There's a newspaper in Chicago for and by the black community called Indigo, and I was just reading a story about a new book about the Underground Railroad portion in Illinois, and the National Park Service is working on extending to more sites, and there is mention of the Dutch Reformed Church in connection with slavery and free blacks and Native Americans and so forth. The magazine is N-Digo, and this is the issue for September 2nd through 8th. It's a weekly free handout newspaper. The book is called The Underground Railroad in Illinois, and the author is based in Wheaton. Her name is Glenette, two N's, and E-T-T-E, Tilly Turner. Perhaps you've heard of it. If not, it's, I guess, South Holland and some of the other suburbs that were named for Dutch ancestors and so forth are part of that link to the Underground Railroad. My question is, what is the take on the Christians that you interacted with, the relation to the local economy in countries such as Ghana, Malawi, Togo, others? Is it something like liberation theology that says there are human reasons for poverty that can be addressed by human beings, that you're not necessarily destined for poverty? Or how do the churches there basically relate to the local political scene and economy is basically my question. Open-ended question.
Very good question. Thank you. We'll return to our guest, Don Mason, who I neglected to mention earlier is also president of the Illinois Conference of Churches. Go right ahead, Don.
Thank you for that question. That moves us to the most important, the most talked about, the most lively discussions on issue-related discussions at the meeting in Ghana of the World Alliance of Reformed Churches. If the issue at the 21st General Council in Ottawa in 1982 was racism in South Africa, and that's an important story, if it was mission in Seoul, Korea in 1989, in Debrecen, Hungary in 97, and now again in Accra, Ghana in 04, the issue is economic justice. This has been moving up the ladder to become what the Reformed churches are now calling a matter of faith. It is a status confessionis. It is so integral to the gospel to confront the powers of the world with the growing discrepancy between those who have resources and those who do not, that it's enough to make a North American pretty uncomfortable. But this is a lively discussion, and each of the participating churches, all 215 of us, are asked to go back to our own church. We were asked 7 years ago to go to your church and formulate your response to this as an issue of faith. So we're struggling with that, and at the end of it, they were using words like empire to describe the approach of the European, North American nations. There was a uneasiness about that on the part of some, and there was the people from Eastern Europe had a strong viewpoint on this. But the voices from the South, and they are articulate and powerful voices from Asia, Africa, Latin America, are putting this on the front burner. This is the Bible read through the eyes of people in the 80% of the world that have 20% of the resources are noticing that there is a huge issue that the church cannot ignore.
The caller particularly mentioned a certain type of theology. Mm-hmm. Would you like to respond to that?
Well, I think it's clear that liberation theology has affected many Christians in the Third World. But that language wasn't precise. I don't think we're limited to that perspective now to say that the gospel calls for attention to the needs of human beings. And right now, there's a large percentage of the world where it's getting a lot worse instead of better in terms of meeting the needs for food and nutrition and jobs and income. Malawi is one of the poorest countries of the world, and that's where I've had my deepest experience so far in Africa. Ghana seemed to be a little more advanced economically. But I think the prevailing viewpoint was that we are being asked to form a covenant, to be in solidarity with each other, and that's something that is very hard for we who are 6% of the population and have that 80% of the resources available to us. To understand what this means in terms of the economic policies of the World Food Bank and the international debt issues, where nations are required by our restructuring mechanisms to give priority to repaying a debt that's been paid several times over but never completely eradicated at the risk of losing funds for meeting the human needs in their own countries.
When the delegates at this world conference in Africa, at this Christian Conference of Reformed Churches, when they talked about attacking the causes of poverty, are they talking about attacking the imperialistic policies of Europe and America?
Well, I'll have to say I don't fully comprehend what the strategy will be, but I do think that that the church is squarely laying the challenge before the powers and structures of the world, that this is our top priority. We didn't ignore health issues. HIV/AIDS is a huge overwhelming crisis in Africa and other parts in Asia. We didn't ignore the international turmoil about war and refugees or gender justice, a lot of discussion about that, issues of creation, stewardship of the resources. But if I had to put one issue that rose to the top, economic justice is that one.
We're talking with Don Mason, who is the pastor of the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana, and was a recent visitor, along with his wife, Donna, to the World Alliance of Reformed Churches meeting in Ghana. And Don and Donna also went to Malawi for 2 weeks as part of a sister church program, looking particularly at one of the projects that does deal with economic justice, the Shallow Well Project. I want to talk about that in a minute, but let me give the phone numbers again for listeners who might like to ask a question. 1-800-222-9455. Since we do have listeners from Chicago to Indianapolis this time of year, there's a toll-free number you can call anywhere in between in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. So, Don, what about your time in Malawi? What is this sister church relationship?
That was almost a redeeming feature of our trip. I think I might have come home feeling pretty discouraged about the issues in front of us. But to revisit Malawi, where I've had a chance to be there twice before, this university community here in Champaign-Urbana has helped us develop some pretty strong friendships with people from Malawi. Eventually, our church had a one-on-one sister church relationship with the Jeans, what's now called the Jeans Church of Domasi. And together, over the last 8 years, we've identified clean water as something that would greatly reduce the waterborne diseases among the children. And it was one small step. There are a few other projects we have, but this is one that both churches have wrapped themselves around, and there have been some pretty spectacular sidetracks that have helped it happen. But for $300 of concrete and pipes and pumps, a community there can gather sand and stones and hard labor and in a fairly short time build and develop and install a shallow well that will replace a swampy area where they've been drawing water for decades or perhaps centuries, and it can be replaced with water that's protected and safe.
I want to hear more about that, but let's go to a caller waiting on line one. Go ahead, please. Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to ask about the reference that was made just a few minutes ago about we being 6% of the world's population and having access to 80% of the resources. I had heard the statistic myself that we're 6% and use 30% of the world's resources. I hadn't heard the one about have access to 80%, and I was wondering if you could tell me where that comes from so that I could use it in a presentation I myself will be giving.
Well, our guest is looking through some of his resources he has here to see if his memory was accurate and maybe to find where that came from.
Yeah.
While he's doing that, I'll have you found?
I may have misspoken. I don't have the information that I need right here. But there was a PowerPoint presentation given that I have available to me, and I'll just have to take a fresh look at that and get my figures more precise so that I can I want to be as precise as I can. I know that it knocked us all for a loop when this presentation was given, and it was pretty well documented. It was something people had worked on for a couple of years.
And if listeners would like to contact you to get that information, may they – do you have a phone number you could give out or an email address or a website?
I'd be happy to, yes. The phone number, first of all, for the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana, Illinois, is area code 217-367-8357. And we also have a website, but... I can give an email address if that would help.
Fine.
Let's go with an email address is office@firstpresurbana. That's all one word, firstpresurbana.org. office@firstpresurbana.org.
And let me repeat the phone number, 217-367-8357 for that listener or others who would like to check up on that detail when Reverend Mason has a chance to find it. We have another caller waiting on line four. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. My question dovetails with the previous callers. And specifically, you had mentioned, although you didn't mention specifically, this passage in the gospel, and it's in Matthew 25, 35, and verses and so forth. And specifically, it says, that which you do to the lesser you do to me. What do you suggest is the most forceful way that we as people of faith can bring that, and especially to people also of faith, that message? That, and these are people who may not be really making that connection of what Jesus talks about in that passage with what is currently going on and specifically what we should really be doing. You get the gist of my question?
Thank you for the question. Before you leave us, oops, we missed you. Sorry. The question, Don, is in relation to the Matthew 25 passage where Jesus says, what you as my followers do to the least of these, my brethren, those who are in need, you are doing that to me. And he asks, how can that message be spread around?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you correctly noted that it's integral to the message of Jesus that the meeting the specific physical needs of people for food, for water, for health and health resources is right there at the top, and we cannot be faithful, and we cannot give our faith statement without giving high attention to this matter. The strategy is, I don't have a quick fix for that, unfortunately. I think it's going to take some hard work, and we need to bring the economist and the strategy planners, the financial well-informed people into the conversation. And I think there's some evidence, and some people wondered, well, how safe did you feel in Africa as a North American? Because there's some pretty angry feelings among folks out in the third world about Europe and North America. And I may be getting off the track a little here, but first of all, I never had any feeling, any awareness of not being safe. But I think people of the world seem to separate our national policymakers and the Christian communities here. And there is some credibility among the world church about what Christians in North America are saying and doing. There's some evidence that they realize we're struggling and grappling with these issues, and they respect that. And it wasn't surprising in some ways that they chose a North American to be the president of the World Alliance for the next 7 years. The person elected was Dr. Cliff Kirkpatrick, the head of the church I'm a part of, the Presbyterian Church USA. It's the first time. Well, it's not the first time, but some would have thought, I think Cliff himself would have thought that, well, the new leader will probably come from Africa or Asia. But replacing an Asian, they chose a North American. Why? Not because he's an American, not because they love the policies of our country, but because they respect the effort of the Presbyterian Church USA to grapple with the same issues that the world church is facing.
The last caller raised the issue of dealing with specific areas of human need, and you were giving us an example as that call came in of people who in this country put forward how much, $300, did you say?
Well, in the partnership for shallow wells, it's quite a story. When we arrived in Malawi, the second full day we were there, the church had gathered a group that included about 400 people for a meeting at the church on shallow wells. The group included village headmen from about 40 or 50 villages. It included the two regional chiefs. It included two members of parliament and a lot of folks, just plain folks, from these communities who were interested in clean water. And this meeting started with breakfast and then a meeting gathering at 10. It went until 1 in the afternoon. They served dinner, a lunch to everyone, and gave transportation home. It's the first time that a group like that had gathered in that church, many of them. There were Muslims, there were Seventh-day Adventists, there were Catholics, there were Presbyterians, there were people of no faith, there were Sikhs. And it doesn't matter, your faith tradition doesn't matter. It's a community project where training was given of what is required of a community to dig the well and to maintain it so that it's sustainable for 50 years. And that is a miracle to see this happen. There will be, we had 10 wells, 12 wells last year. This year, I'll be very surprised if there are not 70 additional wells put in, some guessed as high as 100. Why? because the enthusiasm and the organization is happening in Malawi primarily, but also in the sister church relation, it's caught the imagination locally here. A Christian high school challenged one key club, challenged another, until they raised $17,000 for this project in Memphis, Tennessee, someone related to, by teacher as a teacher to a member of our church. Every Saturday morning at the Urbana Farmers Market, there's a bunch of pictures and signs about this Wells project surrounding what's called the Warm Heart Tomato Project, and a seed company has donated some property for us to put 700 tomato plants in, and we go out every Friday. It's pretty energy intensive. It requires a lot of labor, but dozens, I think hundreds of people get caught up in it. Eventually, they go out and pick the tomatoes. They come back. They're washed. They're brought to the market. Within 12 hours, they're being purchased by people with the understanding that the money goes to the Shallow Wells Project.
So these are all volunteers who
and
do
they're
this?
All, yeah. Right. It raises a few hundred dollars each week. Hmm. The extra tomatoes are brought to the church, and if our church doesn't take them, the Korean church that meets there in the afternoon takes them. People make a donation. One person put a check, handed over a check. They bought three tomatoes and gave us a check for $400. It's one of those.
Those are tasty tomatoes.
And here's a surprise. When we got to Malawi, they said, we have a surprise for you. And the well, the first well of these 100 wells went in at the church itself. And they took us out to the well and showed us a fenced-in area where they have a warm heart garden. And they're growing tomatoes and other vegetables, a lot of leafy vegetables, right there at the well site, and selling the produce to cover the cost of maintaining the well. Mm. So if anything goes wrong, they can replace the pump or the pipes. And that's become the pattern. And now all over the southern part of Malawi, people are putting gardens, as they call them, by the well site, with the idea of that's how they'll pay for the technician that has to come out and help them fix the well if it breaks down.
Now, the congregation you serve, the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana, has had this sister church relationship with this, the Jeans Church in Malawi. But the Shallow Well Project is part of the Marian Medical Mission that's invented this method of getting wells built in very poor places in different places in Africa. And that started by a couple Christian lay folks, not clergy, Tom and Jocelyn Logan, who've been guests on this program, talking about their efforts. But I think that totally there are, over 500 more wells put in just this fall.
Thank you. Yes, we got our inspiration and our technology and our training from the Marian Medical Mission Project in the northern part of Malawi, where it's been going on for 13 years or more. But what the miracle here, you might say, is that the people, the Malawians from the Livingstonia Synod in the north, crossed a barrier that hadn't been crossed before when they brought the training to the Blantyre Synod. And two synods in the same church where they have very different customs about culture as well as faith have begun to work together. And that's Malawians teaching Malawians the technology. So, yes, I'm glad we are able to tie that in with the important work that Tom Logan and Jocelyn have been involved in the north and now into other countries, Zambia and Tanzania and so forth.
We are down to just our last couple minutes with our guest today, Don Mason, who is president of the Illinois Conference of Churches, serving a three-year term, pastor of the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana, and recently back from a four-week trip with his spouse, Donna, to Africa. Let me ask just a couple questions about the Illinois Conference of Churches, since we don't get the president sitting in our studio that often. What are some of the key issues that are facing the Illinois Conference of Churches, and tell our listeners who's part of it, first of all, I guess.
The Illinois Conference of Churches includes 32 denominations or communions, and the joy for me is that it's not only the mainline Protestant churches, but it also includes the Orthodox churches and the Roman Catholic churches. So all the main streams of Christianity are related. And the key issue that this group has taken on, and it's related to my experience at the slave castle, is anti-racism, and we're doing a systemic approach that we are trying to declare ourselves to be an anti-racist institution. It's going to call for a radical rethinking of how we operate, how we meet, what we do. And furthermore, it's a 10-year commitment to train a cadre of people who can be available to not only ourselves but to all the churches we represent.
When you talk about mainline Protestant churches, explain that term.
Uh-huh. Well, among Protestants, we have the those who are somewhat, are long-term. I wouldn't be sure exactly how to describe us. We're the Presbyterians. I'll give examples. The Methodists, the Lutherans, the churches that have traditionally worked in the National Councils of Churches and the World Council of Churches.
These include African-American, traditionally African-American.
There are three African-American denominations already part of the state conference of churches, but that's an area, for example, where they're not represented in keeping with their population.
And you've received some leadership in this focus, though, from those from those denominations, I take it.
The people who did the 3-year study to get us into this were the majority of them were African American, and they've had a lot of experience, especially some people from the Episcopal Church tradition, and a group in Chicago called Crossways. There's been a lot of analysis that's very valuable, and I think my personal hope is that the Illinois Conference of Churches and its members will find a way to translate this into some practical changes in the way we operate.
The First Presbyterian Church of Urbana is located where?
We're on the Green Street, 602 West Green Street in Urbana. It's at the intersection of Orchard and Green. And there's parking just on the Orchard Street side mainly.
And your worship services are?
We have two services, 9 o'clock and 11:15 a.m., the more traditional at 9, the newer, more contemporary, less formal style is at 11:15, with adult seminars and classes at 10.
And the phone number at the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana is, again, 217-367-8357. I want to thank our guests, Don Mason, for being on Keeping the Faith this week, and our callers who raised some very good questions and comments. Next week, our guests will be Mary Joy Carnate and Claire Delahunt talking about the student volunteer tutoring programs in the public schools. That'll be September 12. On September 19, our guests will be Tammy Lemke, who is the executive director of United Way of Champaign County, and Dan Wheatman, who is the president of the board, talking about current United Way programs, agencies, and services. I'm Steve Shoemaker, director of the University YMCA. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853.
Graphic novelist Neil Gaiman has a talent for creating strange and fantastic worlds. His Sandman comic books helped spawn the goth movement. And with characters called Dream and Death, he created a new mythology. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we'll visit with Neil Gaiman at his home. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 60s and south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny in the morning, then becoming mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high in the middle 80s with south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The low in the lower 60s with west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour in the evening, shifting to the north 10 to 15 miles per hour after midnight. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.